Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Folks, President Biden says high gas prices are part of an incredible transition, that when it's over, we'll be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels. Meanwhile, you and I will be poorer, and the country will compromise its moral compass by getting in bed with the Venezuelan dictator Nicolas Maduro. And it seems as though President Biden's going to go back to an old hat trick that he tried before that didn't work very well, hitting the reserves, this time relative to the emergency diesel reserve because of record prices for diesel. And in the Northwest Corridor, conditions are worse than any other part of the country. And here to talk about that is Eric Smith, professor at Tulane's Institution of Energy. Eric, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Neil.
Eric, we tried this once, right, with hitting the strategic oil reserves, and ironically,
we're still doing it. Yes. We are down 6 million barrels for last week.
Is it working?
No, but then we said it wouldn't work, so.
You did predict that right here. You said, forget about it already. It's not gonna change a thing.
And this one is even a little more incredible in the sense that we keep referring to it as the diesel reserve. It's not the diesel reserve at all. It's an emergency fuel supply for home heating oil to get people through the winters in the Northeast. Last winter, for example, New England, at one point, 25% of the power being generated and a bigger percentage of the heat being generated for houses was coming from oil. And they just happened to use ultra-low sulfur diesel as the heating oil material up there. So now we've got 1 million barrels we can play with, so we are going to release it. The law says absolutely nothing about using home heating oil reserves to support transportation prices, but that's what we're doing.
Is this just, you know, an act just to kind of say, well, you know, we did something?
Well, I think that's all it is. It's really, you know, you can fool some of the people some of the time. And in this particular case, there's a large Democratic Party contingent in New England. This is not a big surprise to anybody, I don't think. And they are concerned about these high prices, and they do not want to see those votes evaporate because of high fuel prices. So they are going to appropriate this home heating oil condition because, after all, winter doesn't come until next November, and this is a problem today. So we're going to solve today's problem with release of this or some portion of this home heating oil reserve, which was established by Bill Clinton, incidentally, because of voters' concerns about heating their homes. So we're taking a Democratic program and fast-forwarding 20 years and then flipping it and turning it into a transportation fuel reserve by magic, and then we're going to release it in the hopes that it will reduce the price of diesel, and the price of diesel worldwide is up. And so why should we not expect diesel to be up in the United States?
So, as I suspected, this was just going to become a talking point for those that are campaigning during the midterm elections up there in the Northeast. There are a number of contested seats that are coming up, and that's, you kind of feel the same way. That's all this is a talking point, because it's not going to really impact this. And certainly, I think the last time it prices went down for gasoline on for about a week and then right back up.
Well, and what's the legal basis for it? We write laws, we write all kinds of regulations, and we set up agencies to manage these things, and then the president comes in and says, I need some boats next week, so you know, forget all that law stuff, just go do it.
So where are we relative to this production, you know, phenomenon that we have here? You know, we in fact, the other day, I'm sure you're familiar with this. We have about 92 nuclear power plants here in this country, and they created this fund in order to help keep all of those up and running. Some are very aged. 50 years, in fact, and just the other day, Entergy said that they're going to be closing their power station in Michigan. And so it doesn't seem like any of this is working, and we're becoming more reliant on fossil fuel right now in the short term, and we have no capacity.
Well, and we have no coordination. I mean, there is some argument for shutting down the nukes up on the Great Lakes, because they were never included into the rate base, which is the way utilities pay for expensive equipment and assets. And as a result, they can't compete with wind or with natural gas in that particular part of the country, so they are running at a loss. Hence, people want to shut them down. The longer-term or more strategic view would say, if they can't sell electricity, use them to produce hydrogen or produce green methane or, you know, whatever you want in the way of a modified fuel, and you can continue to operate them through their design life, which is, you know, in some cases 15 or 20 years more than the date on the nameplate. So I think that there's a commercial argument that says, well, as long as they can't be part of the rate base, then they have to be shut down and we'll rely on wind and solar. And people forget that the wind and solar are intermittent and the nuclear is not. So it's they will then, 2 years after it's shut down or probably sooner, they'll come back and say, well, why are the lights going out in the middle of the winter? Why is the heat being turned off in the middle of the winter? Because you're regulators and your elected officials can't plan anything on a strategic basis anymore.
So when President Biden says that we're part of an incredible transition right now and that when it's over, we'll be stronger and less reliant on fossil fuels, will we actually be less reliant on fossil fuels?
No. I hate to, you know, contradict the president, but we are going to be as reliant, if not more so, than we are today. And the reason is it's the most cost-efficient way to provide both the power and the lifestyle, if you want to call it that, that we've become used to. And a lot of this fear that's been instilled in people about global warming and everything is keyed around that. You know, I think it was Rahm Emanuel, one of the Democrats from Chicago, came up with a great line, never let a crisis go unexploited, and that's what's going on here. The Democratic Party needed a crisis, and, you know, if they can't have a crisis over one issue, they'll develop one around another, because they need a crisis in order to remain in power.
But, you know, some of the solutions that they're talking about and attempting to provide for this crisis, like turning to Venezuela, you and I have talked about that before. Good move, bad move?
Well, I mean, we are not doing much to follow through with Venezuela. Whether you were a big fan of sanctions or not, they seem to work in terms of reducing the negative impact that Venezuela was having on all the countries around it, including us. And now we're saying, oh, we're sorry, we'll reverse everything and put it back the way it was. Well, the only difference is now the Iranians are running the factories. We're not. And we haven't kept, and they're using Western American-made and European-made parts to rebuild the refineries in Venezuela so they can compete with us. And you have to question yourself, if we were making life so difficult for them with the sanctions, why didn't we at least embargo the supply of spare equipment to fix their refineries? So, yeah. But we didn't do that.
But this administration has kind of signaled that it doesn't really have a lot of hesitancy of getting in bed with Iran either, though, right?
No, they have what they call a policy of moral ambiguity, or, you know, strategic ambiguity, excuse me, which means we're going to keep everybody guessing as to what our real goals are. But then the president goes and meets with the Japanese and says, you know, things are going great in the United States because the price of oil and gas is climbing and people are switching over to electric cars. Well, that's I don't know what what your description of that is, but that certainly doesn't, you know, fit with what the talking points are back in Washington D.C.
Is there actual data to support any of what he's saying?
None that I can see. I mean, I'm sure there are people who will provide you with charts and pretty graphs and things that imply that this is all working very well. But right now we're running all of our refineries flat out. Probably the ones here in the U.S., I mean, in Louisiana and Texas, are running at something north of 93% or 94%. And we're producing all of the diesel and all of the gasoline and increasingly jet fuel that we can. But don't forget, we've shut down 500,000 barrels a day of capacity in Louisiana because of the last cycle. So Convent isn't running anymore, and the Phillips 66 refinery downriver from us is not running either. So we have less capacity than we had before all of this started, and the capacity we have is doing just fine. But we have more demand for the fuels, and we have always been a big exporter of diesel to Europe, so Europe needs the diesel even more than they have in the past. We're shipping them diesel. They're shipping us some gasoline, but the reason you have a diesel shortage is because we can't produce as much as we used to, and we do have these export requirements. If I were a good German or a British citizen, I would be very circumspect about the U.S.'s ability to continue to do this.
Well, we do know that we turned to the Saudis, and the Saudis had promised an increase in production of about 500 million, I think.
500,000 barrels.
500,000 barrels a day by 2027. They've asked them to accelerate that, and I think the CEO of Aramco has said, no can do. We can't make that happen. We don't have the capacity to do so. So, you know,
Sorry situation, I think, is that if you put yourself in the Saudi shoes, who's a more dependable partner right now, the Americans or the Russians? And I think the answer comes from down the Russians.
Yeah.
If you have the limited goals that somebody sitting in Saudi Arabia would have, or the UAE or someplace like that, Egypt, you're saying, you know, I can't predict what the Americans are going to do because they change presidents and all the rules change. It doesn't matter what the laws say.
No, you're exactly correct. And the CEO, and I know you're not prepared to talk about it, but he had some interesting comments. And it seemed to me that it was more about strategic clarity than it was about strategic ambiguity, which I don't know about you, but I appreciate.
Tell me like it is. it's not just a question of are we alienating our Arab friends. We're doing a pretty good job on our Israeli friends at the same time. You know?
Our traditional allies are looking at us as though we're very wishy-washy right now on so many different fronts. It's a little scary when you think about it.
But this is supposed to be the great transition, and we're all doing very well at it, right? So go figure.
And inflation was transitory.
Yeah, that's right.
Eric Smith, professor at Tulane's Institute of Energy, thank you so much for joining us. Always appreciate your insight and your time. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All righty.
We will be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. You really can't make this up. And as you read more and more about this, it gets dicier by the moment. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.